So we welcome everyone to the fifth session of the Bhakti Womanhood and Homemaking series brought to you by bhaktiwoman.org. And so far we've discussed a lot of different sessions here on, we've been talking a lot about, the first session was an introduction, and then we had this session on, the duties based on the different social orders and social classes. And then we talked about, women working in Krishna's culture. And then we also talked about, there were working women in Krishna's culture, but there were also, the different changes that happened in society, which caused, because of industrialization and because of, so many different things, industrialization of the Second World War, that we had, there was a separation of the workplace from the home place for both men and women. And then that affected a woman's home duties if she had to spend 8 hours at work. But on the other hand, because most of the economy was agrarian and was based on barter system and was also based on, cottage industry, they found occupation at home. But because of all of this industrialization and the world wars and everything, there came the separation between work from home, because of which the women had to undergo some difficulty in, managing the workplace and also in taking care of their home duties. So we then thought about, then we discussed about how, let's discuss a little bit about, what those home duties are and how, what is the importance of a woman doing those duties and how it impacts her family and her society in such a very positive and spiritually uplifting way. And it also helps in this, the continuation and in the maintenance and growth of Brahminical culture, if the woman takes care of her home sphere very well. So we talked last week about this concept of motherhood, which is one of a very important role for a woman. And last week we focused a lot on how a woman's duties are very much important, especially the ones that she takes care of her child, and how taking care of the child is basically taking care of the whole person of the child. And when you take care of the whole person of the child, which means taking care of the physical needs, the physical bodily growth, and then the emotional needs and the spiritual needs. So we didn't talk much about the physical needs because we thought there's a lot of expert information already around that. And we thought we'd focus more on the emotional side of things. And then we talked about how a woman's brain undergoes so many different changes because of, pregnancy, and also as she starts taking care of her child. There's a lot of the emotional processing areas and the hormonal changes, especially in the amygdala and the CSF hormone. All of these have a heightened response to situations, and it becomes much easier for a woman to connect with her child. And the more she has eye contact and the more she connects with the child and she breastfeeds the child and handles the baby, the more those areas and regions in the brain grow, and it helps her in connecting better with the child. And while the mother is connecting with the child in such a way, it also helps in with the growth in the child's brain. And the child grows in, the child's amygdala and other regions also grow. And it also helps in the child feeling very comforted, confident, and protected. So we discussed some of these things. Today we're going to focus on a lot of different examples on from our scriptures, and what Srila Prabhupada's teachings connected to those examples of great motherhood connected to those examples. So just a minute. Yes. Yes, so today we're going to talk about those examples, and whatever we're teaching here is based on Srila Prabhupada's teachings. based from the Srimad Bhagavatam and the different letters he has written to his disciples and what Srila Prabhupada wanted, and how Srila Prabhupada wanted us to raise our boys and girls. So the purpose of these sessions is to inspire you to understand the greatness of your motherhood. We're not able to give you all the tools and all the resources that need you, that you need to be successful in your motherhood here. The goal here is to inspire you and help you develop a spiritual theme and a spiritual focus towards your motherhood. So this session is geared towards that. So unfortunately, we won't be able to give, cover the entire spectrum of motherhood, which is very, very big. And we probably need a separate seminar series on that. But we will just try to do a little bit justice here to inspire all of us to have the spiritual theme in our motherhood. For those of us who are mothers and for those of us who are not mothers, we can still be, not physically, we've not been able to give birth to children or not yet have been mothers. It's a good learning experience for us so we can appreciate motherhood around us. And also, it's a very good understanding for us so that we can, we can continue being mothers even if physically we haven't given birth. We can still be mothers to, the entire next generation of children and to so many people around us. We can continue being mothers and, hold on to this very important feminine quality that we all have. So without further ado, this session will go a little bit over time. Please bear with me. I think we'll go like 10 minutes over 12:30. So please bear with me on that. So last week we discussed about this entire care of the body, mind and soul, keeping in mind the ultimate welfare of the child. And we saw the example of Suniti and Dhruv Maharaj and how wonderfully she did that activity. And we also, one thing we wanted to mention is that while Dhruv Maharaj was in the forest and he was meditating, Suniti was constantly praying for his welfare. So it was not just that she just showed him some path and, she allowed him to go in that direction, but she also constantly prayed for his welfare. And she approached the Lord for his mercy on her son. So while she pacified his body and she, empathized with his feelings, she also directed his soul. But it was not, she knew that, she can only do so much. And finally, it's the Lord who's going to take care of him. So she was constantly praying for the child. So today we will see a lot of different examples, especially of Yashoda Mai, the most glorious mother of Lord Sri Krishna, a very exalted mother, and how she took care of baby Krishna. And there is so much for us to learn from that. And how Srila Prabhupada is helping us learn from the example of Mother Yashoda. So when baby Krishna was born and also when he was having his childhood pastimes, Mother Yashoda observed that he would, very interested in having butter and also stealing butter from different places, from different homes and different gopis. So we see that Mother Yashoda, like Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows. But Mother Yashoda did not want baby Krishna to go outside and have butter like that because it's very embarrassing for a parent, right? You feed your child nicely, but your child still loves to eat, at other people's homes and acts as if they've never seen something. But so here, Mother Yashoda, and of course she had this great affection for her child and she wanted to, serve her child very nicely. So there were 8 special cows that gave very, very flavorful milk. And Mother Yashoda personally took care of those 8 special cows, personally milked them, and she personally made sure that they ate, that they had their grass in a particular area, which had the Padmagandha grass. So when they had that grass, when they ate the grass, then the milk that came from them was also full of the Padmagandha, which is with the smell of the lotus flower. So it was lotus flavored milk. Already the milk was very high quality. And then plus it was lotus flavored milk. And then she was personally churning the butter and she would personally make various preparations for Lord Sri Krishna. So in this way, she kept the child, baby Krishna, very satisfied. And we see that Srila Prabhupada also explains that to his disciples. So one time there was this, some disciples wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada that, the children caused disturbance in the temple during lectures or during meetings. And should we not allow mothers with children to those meetings? So then Srila Prabhupada writes back to his disciple or to the mothers who are facing that kind of discrimination. And he says, and this is a letter from 1968 to Krishna Devi in Montreal. He says, I have seen Malati. So this is Malati Devi, one of the few first female disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So Malati is nursing her child so nicely that she attended my meeting every day, and the child was playing and she never cried. Similarly, Leelavati's child also never cries or disturbs the meeting. Leelavati was always present with her child. So it depends upon the mother how to keep the child comfortable so that it will not cry. The child cries only when it feels uncomfortable. The child's comfort and discomfort depends upon the mother's attention. So the best solution is that we should train our all first day small babies in such a way that they are always satisfied and there will be no disturbance in the meeting and there will be no complaint. So Prabhupada is also saying that, you know, the mother keeps the child happy and comfortable, just like Yashoda Mai is taking care of her child's needs, what he needs at what time, baby Krishna needs what, and, you know, whether he needs her personally or whether he needs to eat something. So you all are wonderful mothers and you all know this thing that, you know, when you personally take care of your child very nicely, then the child is always happy and satisfied. So that does not disturb the mind of the child. Otherwise, if the child is not happy and satisfied and the mind of the child gets disturbed, then the child and then the child learns how to react to those situations where they're not feeling satisfied. Then that becomes a part of their being, where they're constantly disturbed only. They're constantly anxious, feeling anxious, disturbed or irritated. That becomes part of their nature. So here, Srila Prabhupada is giving us some nice tips here based on, you know, some of the experience he himself has and being an acharya himself, a wonderful acharya, guiding all his female disciples so wonderfully in their duties. And also we will see how he's teaching based on the example of Mother Yashoda. So another thing which was there in the 7th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or if you read the Krishna book. So when baby Krishna was 3 months old and baby Krishna was, had just about learned how to turn his back a little bit. So then Mother Yashoda wanted to, you know, have some ceremony to mark that occasion and to thank the Lord that everything was going properly for her baby. So after that ceremony was complete, the bathing ceremony, and she received the brahmanas nicely, she gave them proper respect, proper charity, cows and garlands. So see, here you see, this is another of the woman's, you know, duties where she does all the charity. And after all of them, you know, the brahmanas chant proper Vedic hymns to observe the ceremony nicely, then Mother Yashoda, she sees that the baby is feeling sleepy and she lies down on the bed with the child until the child is peacefully asleep. So here, Srila Prabhupada, you know, is explaining that an affectionate mother takes great care of her child and is always anxious to see that the child is not disturbed even for a moment. As long as the child wants to remain with the mother stays with the child. And the child feels very comfortable because the child is totally dependent upon the mother. So Mother Yashoda saw that her child felt sleepy, and to give him all facilities for sleep, she lay down with the child, and when he was peaceful, she got up to attend her other household affairs. So this physical presence, spirit, like, you know, last week we also talked about this emotional homelessness. You know, so what we're trying to talk about here is that emotionally connecting with the child and being physically present for the child is very, very important. Sometimes we may be physically present, but we may be emotionally absent. But as Prabhupada is telling, when the mother is spirit, physically and emotionally present for the child feels very comfortable. And let's, like, you know, look at what happens when, you know, that does not happen. You know, if the mother is not present, then it can have detrimental psychological and spiritual effects on the child. You know, so sometimes we feel that, oh, the child just needs food to eat and, you know, everything. So I have taken care of that child's needs will be taken care. And, you know, the child doesn't understand anything, so I can go and do my thing. Or maybe we're not educated enough. You know, we don't know these things so well that, you know, in a bit to manage our lives, sometimes we forget that this is an important aspect, you know. And when we don't do that, you know, there are psychological studies that talk about how such children develop with so low self-esteem. And they grow because they don't feel that, you know, they are valuable enough, that people will, that their mother was spending time with them. And they also grow up with a lot of guilt. Why guilt? Because whenever they are trying to get the mother's attention, the mother is always busy doing something else. So then they start feeling guilty every time they try to call out for the mother's attention, and they see that the mother has to leave something and come to them. And the mother doesn't seem very happy and comfortable about it. Or, you know, certain things are not happening because they are demanding the mother's attention. Then they grow up with a lot of guilt that, you know, oh, it's because of me that my mother is not able to do what she wants to do. Or also, it's, you know, something is wrong with me, and that's why my mother doesn't want to spend time with me. Though the mother may not even be thinking like that, you know, sometimes we just don't know these things. But this is how it impacts the children. And what happens is because they're never sure, right from their childhood, they're never sure that, you know, that they could develop a bond with their mother, you know, the closest relationship. Then they feel something is wrong with them. And also they feel scared in developing bond with other adults during their childhood and also when they grow up. And why does that fear come? Because they feel that, oh, if I develop a bond, then this person may also leave me and go away. I may not be there when I need. So in order to protect themselves so that they don't feel miserable about themselves, they don't develop those bonds with other adults during their childhood and also when they grow up as adults. And because, you know, like say when a child gets hurt, the child does not know that getting hurt is a big thing, right? So many times all mothers say that, you know, when the child falls down, sometimes when you don't, you know, the mother looks at the child and the child throws a big, you know, like cries loudly and, you know, does all those, you know, they express their pain and everything. But if you don't look at the child, then the child just like forgets it and goes away. Now, that's a positive outcome of that. But also when, you know, that eye contact is not made, that physical nurturing is not given, the pacification is not done. In general situations, I mean, hats off to everyone for their parenting strategies. I'm not saying every time the child falls down, you have to go and look at the child. That's part of helping them grow up also. But just like last week, we discussed about this importance of eye contact and this developing of the relationship with the child. What happens is when they're receiving that love and receiving that care, and when they are feel getting hurt, then the mother is, you know, taking extra care for them or saying, oh, you know, oh, you got hurt. I'm so sorry. Does that hurt really bad? Like when she's reflecting the child's feelings. And the child is able to understand their own feelings. And when they're receiving that kind of unconditional love and care, they also learn how to nurture and take care of themselves as when they grow up. But when they don't receive that, the ability to do that for themselves reduces. And also for others also reduces. So because they haven't received it from someone else, they don't realize they have to also give it to others. Right? So because they haven't received that empathy, they don't develop empathy. But when they receive that empathy, when they receive that love and care, they develop very nicely in the emotional intelligence for themselves and for others also. So basically, they grow up not knowing how to receive love. And because of all of these things, because of this fear in developing bonds with other adults and having this, you know, low estimation of themselves that, oh, you know, maybe I'm not good enough. That's why my mom doesn't want to have a relationship with me. And though it may not be intentional what the mother is doing, it's just she doesn't know, or maybe she's so busy. Then what happens is because of these kind of things, it becomes very difficult for such children to develop a relationship with other adults and with Guru and with Krishna, because they are never able to feel close with anybody. Because they feel if I become close, this person may also abandon me and go away. So it's, you know, the idea is not to create pressure on the mothers. You all are wonderful mothers doing a very wonderful job taking care of your children. The idea is just to educate you on the importance of, you know, the role that you are already performing. And also how, you know, when you even take care of the child physically and emotionally and connect nicely, it has a very high spiritual impact also. Because everything is based on relationship. So when the child learns how to have relationship, they learn how to have relationship with Guru and Krishna also and the devotees also, which are extremely important for us to, or any child or anybody to progress in spiritual life. Now, another example of Yashoda Mai is, you know, how she would secure herself when situations would get confusing. You know, motherhood can be a roller coaster. One, you know, some days are good, some days are difficult. You don't know what's going on with your child. Whether it's a baby or it's an elder child or it's a teenager, you don't know what's going on, you know, because every day is a different day. And every day, you know, it's like when you're a mother of a, you know, for your first child turns 5, you know, in your life also, you're being the mother of a 5-year-old child for the first time in your life. When the child turns 10, you're being the mother for the first time for a 10-year-old, and for a 15-year-old, for a 20-year-old, especially with the first child. So every day is a learning experience for you, and every day is a challenge. It's not that you could figure it out. You know, constantly you're trying to understand, and you know, constantly you're trying to evaluate whether I'm doing something right or am I doing something wrong, or you know, I don't want to do something that's harmful for my child. You know, I want to have the right consciousness. I want to do it right. So there can be very confusing situations like that. And you know, every day is a new day. Every day is a new challenge, as I said. So Yashoda Mai also faced something like that. When Lord Shri Krishna, one time his friends came and complained that he was eating dirt. So this is there in the 10th canto, 8th chapter of the Bhagavatam, 41st verse. And then the children came and complained to Mother Yashoda, he's eating dirt. So when she asked Bibi Krishna to open his mouth, then in his mouth she saw the entire cosmic manifestation. And she saw everything, the universe, the sun, the planets, you know, the entire cosmic manifestation in the mouth of her baby. And it was very, very bewildering for her because so many demons were anyway coming. And, you know, her child had already gone through so many dangers. And then to see something like that in the mouth, Mother Yashoda, it was very difficult for her. And so in that situation, she was feeling so bewildered and so, you know, scared for her child. That, you know, so many times we also feel bewildered, feel scared for our child, but we usually immediately go into action mode in trying to do something to, you know, change the situation or protect our child and all, which is good. And we must do that. We must react immediately. But we can say a moment of prayer before that, just like Yashoda Mai. And Yashoda Mai says, therefore, let me surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offer my obeisances unto him, who is beyond the conception of human speculation, the mind, activities, words and arguments, who is the original cause of this cosmic manifestation, by whom this entire cosmic cosmos is maintained, and by whom we can conceive of its existence. Let me simply offer my obeisances, for he is beyond my contemplation, speculation and meditation, is beyond all of my material activities. So basically, she is rather disappointed, thinking, my endeavors to protect my son by charity and other auspicious activities are useless. The Supreme Lord has given me many things, but unless he takes charge of everything, there is no assurance of protection. I must therefore ultimately seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is important, to pray for your child. We saw in Suniti's example, she also prayed for her child. And when we are in a difficult, confusing situation, and parenting is a challenge, you know, you're constantly on the tenterhooks and you're constantly, you know, feeling so, and the reason we are, you know, feeling like that anxious is because we are responsible. And that's why we feel this anxiety. So what she's telling is, yes, you know, we can do all of these things, but ultimately the Lord is going to protect. So we must have these moments where we pray for our children. It's very, very important. And then Srila Prabhupada also, it's also said in the 10th canto, 8th chapter, 42nd verse, the next verse, she's telling, it is by the influence of the Supreme Lord's Maya that I am wrongly thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband, that Krishna is my son, and that because I am the queen of Nanda Maharaj, all the wealth of cows and calves are my possessions, and all the cowherd men and their wives are my subjects. Actually, I also am eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord. He is my ultimate shelter. So no matter what you have, she was the queen of Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj was very wealthy. 900,000 cows. Vrindavan was a very opulent place and everyone was their subjects. You know, and everyone was, you know, and she had a wonderful relationship with everyone in that place. Right? And she could just call on anybody to help her. But she's saying, I am not this, you know, this queen. I'm not this great personality, this wealthy lady who has everyone at her beck and call. You know, I am also subordinate to the Lord. So none of these things that I have are going to ultimately protect my child. It's only the Lord who's going to protect my child. And what do I know about protecting my child? Let me pray to the Lord to protect my child because he is my ultimate shelter. Right, so sometimes, you know, this is based on the purports of Srila Prabhupada in text 41 and 42. So far we read the translations of those verses. But here this is what Prabhupada has to say, that sometimes, you know, we are in trouble for which there is no reason. And we don't know what to do and how to solve it, right? And Prabhupada says that the remedy is to surrender to the Lord. And we must immediately offer our obeisances to him and immediately pray to the Lord for protection. And pray in this mood of Yashoda Mai, that who am I, you know? I am subordinate to you. You are the supreme controller. So you are my shelter. Please protect my child. Please protect me. and then your position will be secure. So we should willingly allow Krishna to be in charge of our motherhood, of our parenting, and of our raising of our children. Then all protection is guaranteed. So, you know, something to introspect for all of us. How much are we praying to the Lord, you know, to guide our children properly, to guide us properly? And how much are we surrendering to the Lord like that? You know, some inspiration here from Yashoda Mai. And another inspiration from Yashoda Mai is in the pastime, this beautiful pastime that we celebrated in the entire Kartik month of Damodar Leela. So baby Krishna was fond of eating butter. So she caught him one time in her own home when she went to take care of the milk. He went to the area where the butter pots were put, and he climbed up. And then he was having butter from those pots, and he was, you know, licking the butter with his hand, and then he was giving the butter with the same hand to the monkeys. You know, what fortune the monkeys had to have directly the remnants of the Lord from the Lord himself. Right? Monkeys are so fortunate. So when Mother Yashoda came running over there, she could see the baby footsteps. She could see marks, you know, where all Krishna had gone. And she came there, and then baby Krishna got so scared of her that he started running away from there. And then he started running outside in the backside of the palace. And Mother Yashoda was running behind him. And baby Krishna kept dodging her. Mother Yashoda did not give up. She kept dodging behind him with a stick. So Mother Yashoda had an angry face, and she was going behind him with a stick. And Prabhupada says, Mother Yashoda, and then, you know, baby Krishna was looking very afraid because he is seeing his mother angry with a stick, and he knows he did something wrong. And we read the description of his, you know, whole expression that he has, the feelings he's having while in the Damodar Ashtakam that we sing during the Kartik month. So Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book that Mother Yashoda could understand that Krishna was unnecessarily afraid, and for his benefit she wanted to allay his fears. Being the topmost well-wisher of her child, Mother Yashoda thought, if the child is too fearful of me, I don't know what will happen to him. Mother Yashoda then threw away her stick. In order to punish him, she thought to bind his hands with some ropes. So she was running with the stick. She saw baby Krishna was very scared. And then she just wanted to use the stick to impress upon Krishna that, hey, you should not do something like that. But she did not, she had her senses in control, and she was able to understand that the child is so scared. If the child is so scared of me, I don't know what will happen to him. So she throws the stick away. And then she just binds his hands with the rope, and that is also, as we see, to protect him. So sometimes, you know, in our anger, when we are angry, you know, you have to show anger to the children sometimes. You know, you have to be firm. But are you doing it as a service to the child? For the benefit of the child, or are you getting consumed by your own anger? Right? But here in Mother Yashoda's parenting, mothering, you can see she's using anger for a purpose. When she sees the purpose is achieved, she gives up the anger. She throws the stick away. Right? But in our case, we may start beating, or we may get really angry. The child may get really scared, and then we lose the relationship with the child. Right? So things to see, things to consider in, you know, each of our motherhood themes that we have. And here she also punishes him. Basically, she ties him up. But the reason she ties him up is because he's already scared now, and he's become so restless. You know, he's seeing her angry, and plus he's restless. She doesn't want him to go outside, and that would become another disturbance, you know. So therefore, because of full affection to stop Krishna from leaving the house, she wanted to bind him with the rope. Mother Yashoda, Srila Prabhupada says, wanted to impress upon Krishna that since he was afraid merely to see her stick, he should not perform such disturbing activities as breaking the container of yogurt and butter and distributing its contents to the monkeys. Mother Yashoda did not care to understand who Krishna was and how his power spreads everywhere. There is an example of pure love for Krishna. And because she did not want to know who Krishna was, she didn't, you know, and so she was in this pure motherhood rasa with the child of, you know, very exalted motherhood that we are able to learn from her example. So some things to learn from Yashoda Mai. She was always present with the baby. She used anger, did not become consumed by anger. She kept her child very satisfied, and she punished to protect the child, but not out of her own anger. And she took shelter of the Lord in these type of confusing situations. So some, you know, these kind of lessons are there from Yashoda Mai, so that we can develop this same kind of mood. You know, if you keep reading about Yashoda Mai from the Krishna book, you will also develop a similar mood like her towards your own child and towards the Lord himself. So very nice. And the reason we are going through these examples of Suniti and Mother Yashoda is so that we can also develop that mood, and we can also have that spiritual focus in our motherhood so that our children are delivered from the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. You know, otherwise there are millions of books written on parenting. There's no point in reading those books unless they help you develop this spiritual focus towards your parenting so that your child can be delivered from the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death, as we read last week. So another very beautiful example is Narad Muni's mother. So this is from Narad Muni's previous lifetime. So Narad Muni's mother was a very simple woman. She was a maidservant in an ashram of where, you know, very exalted Bhaktivedantas used to come during the 4 months of the rainy season to practice austerities. So she was a simple, very simple woman. You know, now some of us may feel very, inadequate in our motherhood many times and not know what is really beneficial for my child. Not know what decision to take, where to, you know, how to raise them. You know, sometimes we feel inadequate, we feel helpless. So in that situation, we can pray to the Lord. But another is a very beautiful example of Narad Muni's mother. So she was a very simple woman. She was not, but what she did right was she was staying in the right place. So she was in a spiritual atmosphere where very spiritually elevated people were there. And she was serving them, taking care of their needs, cooking, cleaning. As you can see, the lady in the back, the blue sari, she's carrying a water pot. Right? But what was right about everything was one thing is she herself was very sincere lady and she was in the right spiritual atmosphere. So that spiritual atmosphere, her child grew up in such a spiritual atmosphere and it helped him become who he is. So as you can see, it was a spiritual atmosphere. That place was surcharged with pure devotion. And it was very powerful association of very elevated spiritual beings. And, you know, she had an opportunity to serve them. Narad Muni also had an opportunity to serve them as a child. And then he had an opportunity to hear from them also. So when you're with spiritual people, then you end up learning so much from them. And because Narad Muni also had the right mood, he was also very self-controlled. He was not playful. So this is when he was a 5-year-old boy or a 7-year-old boy. He was also very self-controlled. Like, you know, while children, you know, other children might go and play outside, Narad Muni was not playful like that. He would, you know, sit down and hear from these people, right? And he would also accept their remnants with permission. So after the Bhaktivedantas had eaten, he would accept their remnants after taking their permission. So because of being in a very spiritually surcharged atmosphere in the association of Bhaktivedantas, hearing from them, serving them, accepting their remnants, and himself having a good nature, you know, Narad Muni was able to achieve perfection, right? So in that lifetime, he was able to hear the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And then the next lifetime or the lifetime after that, I think he became Narad Muni. So this was a very simple woman who probably did not know a lot of spiritual concepts, who did not know so many art of parenting and, you know, emotional care and physical care and all. But she kept her child in a spiritual atmosphere constantly. And because of which her child benefited so much and became such a great personality that he's the Acharya. He's the Acharya in our parampara that we are all following in Narad Muni's footsteps and his guidance like that. Right? So these are some of the things we can do and, you know, to take care of our children. Lessons from Yashoda Mai, lessons from Narad Muni's mother. And now we'll see a few more lessons from Kunti Devi, from Diti and few other mothers like that, and Sita Devi, on how a mother's consciousness influences the child's consciousness. So if we want our children to have the highest spiritual success, we ourselves must have the same, we must ourselves cultivate constantly a spiritual mindedness, a spiritual consciousness. And that will impact how, you know, because a child is constantly getting your association with the mother, till at least they are 16 or 18. They're constantly getting the mother's association until they leave for college or higher education. So they're constantly associating with you. So if you have a spiritual mindedness, it automatically brings your children to that climb of spiritual consciousness. See, many times, if you see small babies, and this is true even for older kids, if they, you know, when they start developing stranger anxiety, but when they see that the mother is very comfortable with some stranger, you know, who's a stranger for the child, of course not a stranger for the mother, then the child also becomes comfortable with the with those people. So if the mother's consciousness is spiritual and she's associating and giving respect to spiritual authorities, to Bhagavad Gita, and devoting herself to hearing and chanting every day, and she's associating with spiritual minded people, then the child also starts trusting those people. But if the mother is associating with spiritual, and sometimes if you see, as you grow up, if the mother does not like somebody because of some experience she may have had, the children also grow up not liking somebody. Suppose you have an issue with somebody, say a friend of yours, whether your friend or your relative, you'll see automatically the children also will not come and talk to you very comfortably if they are a little older and they've been told like that. So when they see a mother has a liking for something, they develop that liking. They see mother has dislike for something, they develop that dislike. So whatever your consciousness is as a mother, whatever your attitude is, your spiritual focus is, your child will also develop the same way. And we can see from some of these examples. And this becomes right even before conception. And of course, at conception, it is both the father and the mother's consciousness. And everything that I'm saying here for the mother is true for the father also. But because a child associates more with the mother, we are trying to have this seminar. And later on, maybe we should have a seminar on fatherhood also. But for now, we focused on mothers. So here we see that when Diti, she was Kashyapa Muni's wife, and she wanted to have a child. And she was very eager to have a child. So she approaches her husband in the evening time. And she says, you know, I am overcome with this desire to enjoy with you and to have a child. So please satisfy my desire. And her husband says, hey, it's not the right time. You know, Lord Shiva is going to pass by. So it's, you know, disrespectful that if we engage in such an act in the evening time, let's wait for this time to pass. And, you know, her desire to have a child is coming from this little bit competitiveness also, because her sister Aditi has already had children. And, you know, some of her other sisters and her other, you know, friends have already had children. So it's become a little bit like that. Hey, they have, I also want to have. And then she does it at the wrong time. You know, she engages in the act of having a child at the wrong time. But it's a time when Lord Shiva is passing, and then, you know, all the ghosts and the, you know, all those type of people are passing. And then because her timing is not right and her consciousness is not right, she ends up giving birth to Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, who are two demons. Right? So it's very important to have the right consciousness right from even before conception. And also, if you see in Hiranyakashipu's, anyway, that's a later seminar we are going to have in, I think in February, about having a proper spiritual conception, you know, how it goes a long way in having good children, you know, sacred bonding, sacred conception. So anyway, this, you know, this is how it influences. But on the other hand, if you see Devahuti, Devahuti was also a princess, just like Diti. And she was also married to a Muni. She was married to Kardama Muni. But she has a child with proper preparation. For 12 years, she is just serving her husband, who is a very spiritually elevated person. And when she approaches him to have a child, it is just out of her desire to have a child. So first she has 9 daughters, so very spiritually elevated daughters. And then when Kardama Muni is leaving for Vanaprastha, then she's telling, but if you leave, who will take care of me? You know, I need a son to take care of me. So then Kardama Muni tells her to perform certain vratas and certain austerities. Then Devahuti performs all of those things and her consciousness gets even more purified. And then who does she have as a child? She has a Supreme Lord himself as a child. So this is a story of two princesses married to two sages who live in hermitages. But one has demons as a child and the other has a Supreme Personality of Godhead as a child. So very important, you know, this consciousness. So people who already have children, you know, I'm sure you had good consciousness. And people who are planning children in the future, please attend our seminar in February. We're going to have proper conception, you know, following these certain things so that you invite the right kind of children. You're blessed with the right kind of children with the proper spiritual mindset. So you see that even at before birth, the consciousness of the child is impacted by the consciousness of the parent. So now we'll see the example of Kunti Devi. So Kunti Devi was a single mother. She raised her children single-handedly. You know, her husband left his body and then her co-wife also left with the husband. She performed sati. So Kunti Devi had to raise her stepsons also, you know, Madri's children also. So Kunti Devi's own children were Yudhishthir, Bhim and Arjun. But she raised Nakul and Sahadev also, who were Madri's children from Pandu. But she raised Nakul and Sahadev very nicely and actually with even more special attention than her own sons. So because she raised those children with so much love and affection and care, automatically Yudhishthir, Bhim and Arjun also had that protectiveness and love and affection towards them. But if she did not raise them like that, or she raised them like, oh, they're not my children, they're stepchildren and all, then automatically the other brothers will also develop the same consciousness. Then another thing is, she always had respect for her in-laws in spite of their unfair behavior, right? Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, everyone. She always performed her dharma of properly respecting her husband's relatives. Right? That's one of the vows we take in our marriage. And because she had that consciousness, her children also always had respect for Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. And in spite of whatever Dhritarashtra did to them, they always spoke very respectfully. They never retaliated. They never thought of taking revenge from him. In fact, after the war of Mahabharata was over, and everyone was, you know, all the Kauravas, you know, Dhritarashtra's children were dead. And Dhritarashtra had actually supported the war against the Pandavas. But after the war was over, the Pandavas were so great and exalted that they continued serving Dhritarashtra and Gandhari like their own parents in their own palace, without making them feel bad about anything. So that is because Kunti had that mindset also. And while she was dealing with so many anxieties related to her children, right from when they were teenagers or even young children, they were always danger of life. See, it's like now if you read the stories of people in Syria and how they are, you know, trying to cross over and take so many risks of crossing over the Mediterranean Sea and going to find a safe haven in Europe. The reason they are doing it is to protect their children, right? They are in constant danger of their life. So here Kunti Devi's children were also constant danger of life, you know. So she had so many anxieties, but she was constantly praying to the Lord. And she never had this negative mindset to the Lord that, hey, I am your aunt. And how come, you know, you didn't take care of my children properly? No, she was always loving, always subservient, always worshipping the Lord. So children also had the same mindset. She raised her children to follow the principles of dharma. She raised her children to offer deeper respect to elders, even if it was unfair. And she treated her sister-in-law with such great respect, Gandhari. The children also then served her, right? And since she was grateful to the Lord in all situations, if you read in the first canto, 8th chapter of the Bhagavatam, Kunti Devi's prayers, she is very grateful to the Lord for whatever situation. She's not telling, why did these situations come? She's telling, I'm so grateful that you took care of us in all of these difficult situations and these situations which were very, fatal actually. So because she has that attitude, her children also develop that attitude, right? And because she has that attitude towards the elders, her children also develop respect for the elders, like that. And if you see Sita Maharani, goddess Sita, Sita Devi, she was banished from the kingdom. And if you read in the Ramayana, when she's being banished, she is of course feeling very sad, but at the same time she wants to follow the will of her husband, Lord Ram. And she's staying in this hermitage, right? And she's staying over there, and she has her two sons over there, Lav and Kush. But because she always had respect for the father, she never spoke anything negative about Lord Ram to them. In fact, they didn't even know. So when they went and spoke, you know, the glories of Lord Ram in front of Ram himself, they spoke with great respect. They never had any disrespect. And she made sure her sons were trained in spiritual topics and culture. And because she was always chaste to Lord Ram, his sons also became like that. So it's very important, you know, so the attitude you have towards your, you know, to the children's father, your children will develop the same attitude. So, you know, sometimes if you are upset with your husband, then sometimes it happens, you know, it does happen, you know, because we are needing for some support. We end up trying to get the support of our children towards us, or we try to say something negative about the father, or because when we cry in front of our children naturally support us. You know, sometimes these kind of negative things can happen. You know, psychologically we can do such things. Now what happens is when the children do not develop proper respect for the father, actually it's a disservice to them. So even if the father may be wrong, it is our job to help the children always develop proper respect for the father. Why? Because if they cannot develop respect for a male authority, the father in their life, they will never be able to develop respect for the guru and for Krishna himself. So even if things are unfair, even if things are not properly, we have to help them develop the culture of respect towards the father. Very, very important. So, and of course, fathers also should behave in a respectful way. But sometimes if we don't expose the faults, or actually if we as mothers don't expose the faults of our husbands in front of our children, they will always be respectful. And if we are respectful, they will be respectful. It's very important. You know, this thing of trying to develop equality and, you know, showing that I'm smarter than my husband. You know, some people, some women have that tendency. I have seen that. And some women end up doing this innocently. They don't realize because they're in so much pain because of how they have been hurt by the husband. This ends up happening. But sometimes some women do it out of a competition. Yes, you may win the competition in the house, but you're doing a disservice to your children. So, and also it impacts girls in the sense that they are never able to trust their husbands in the future. They're not able to respect their husbands in the future. Now, one may say, why should they respect a husband who is fallen or who is not good and all? No, it's actually good for your spiritual benefit. You know, it's good for your consciousness and it's good for your spiritual benefit. Like that. Things, you know, we have to be very careful in what we are doing. And sometimes, you know, when we are confused about something, it is just important to just, you know, very safe to go back to the old culture of what old school has to say. And these things are there even in the Chinese book of culture, there in the American book of, you know, homemaking. All these things are there. So, you know, there are these nice quotes that are there, that what a mother sings to the cradle goes all the way down to the coffin. So right from the baby is born, like even, and we are seeing even before the baby is born, whatever the mother is singing, speaking, interacting, thinking, that goes all the way till the baby becomes an adult, grows up, dwindles, and then finally dies. So they carry that consciousness. And this is from Henry W. Beecher. He is the brother of the lady Catherine Beecher, whose book we are referring to from time to time, The American Woman's Christian Home, Christ-Centered Home. And there is another Jewish proverb, what the daughter does, the mother did. Right? So whatever, you know, like a girl may do now, actually that's the mother's consciousness. Now, we may not be able to understand it so clearly, but actually it works, because I'm not a parent myself. I have the privilege of, you know, having more mind space to observe these kind of things in history or in scripture or in, you know, around people around me. And many times, you know, someone will come and tell me that, oh, my daughter does like this or my son does like this. And, you know, I don't know why they do like this. They should not do like this. And, you know, the children do behave in a certain way in their field of activity, because parents are behaving in a certain way in their own wider field of activity. So sometimes we are not able to relate that why the child, if the child is doing something, that I may be doing it like that also, because our field of activities and scope of activities are different. But the children are just imitating our behavior. And so it's very important, you know, to know these things. You know, that, you know, whatever you are doing, whatever you're thinking, you're going to give that vibration to your child. I'll give you another example. One time we were on a trip, a group of about 25 devotees, you know, went on short vacation somewhere for 2 days, and just nearby, we were all, you know, having fun, you know, Mangalarti and chanting and kirtan and reading Bhagavatam together, and, you know, doing all of those things. This was about 5 years ago. And then one of the days we thought we'll take a day trip. So day trip was at a certain height, and, you know, the car had to go at a certain height. So we were about in like five, six cars, I think. So, you know, certain children were with some other children, and, like, you know, all the families were split depending on who, which child wants to sit with who. So it so happened that in the car, like there were 5 cars. So in the second car, there was a boy sitting. Of course, there were many other people, but we're talking about the specific mother-child relationship. And this boy's mother was sitting in the fourth car. So the fourth car, the mother is sitting, then there is one car which has other people, and then the second car, her son is sitting. So son is in the car ahead of her. And as the car was going on a height, like, I was in the same car as the mother kept, like, feeling very anxious, extremely anxious. And she kept saying things like, what if this car falls down? And, you know, what if, you know, we run out of gas? You know, we've gone so far ahead. You know, there's no gas station, how will we come down? and what if this happens and what if that happens, things like that. So we were in the fourth car and suddenly we saw that the third car stopped. So, and they parked on the side, you know, on that mountain. So then we all stopped the car, right? Because when you're going in a group, you kind of follow each other. So then we saw that the first car stopped, second car stopped, third car stopped. So our fourth car stopped and the fifth car also stopped. Then we all came out, you know, to understand why we stopped. And then it so happened that the son who was sitting in the second car, he was about 8 years old, he went into panic and he kept saying, oh, what if this car falls down? Oh, what if, you know, we run out of gas? And you know what he, you know, so then we were told that then the people who were driving the second car had to call the first car, hey, we have to stop now. So you stop, we are all stopping. And then when we were in the fourth car, we heard the reasons the son was giving to stop the car. We could see that actually the mother was saying the same things. So they were not even in proximity with each other. But, you know, that was the son's response to a situation which was not normal. It was not a normal situation when you're up in the, you know, mountains, you're high up and, you know, the roads are not very wide and, you know. So that was how the son was responding because he had learned from the mother. So this is a practical example. I saw it with my own eyes. You know, so if you are fearful, your son will be fearful. If you are confident, your son is confident. If you see everything in a spiritual way, your children see everything in a spiritual way. Like that. You know, very important. You know, the reason we are sharing all of these examples is if you want your child to do something, if you want your child to, you know, be spiritually minded, you know, worship Krishna, surrender to Krishna, then we have to exhibit it in our own lives because they are going to completely absorb like that. We'll go to the next slide. Yeah. So another thing is, you know, so we talked a lot about this consciousness aspect. And another thing is also about, you know, raising boys and raising girls. So there are certain things that, you know, we have to be careful about that Srila Prabhupada has said. That when we are raising girls, of course, we, you know, help them academically. We help them grow academically and, you know, we give them the best and we help them, you know, because the culture is like that now, you know. You help them, you know, pursue the career they want to career so that they can fend for themselves also if needed. But we have to raise them to become chaste wives. So as much as we are chaste wives, our daughters will grow up as chaste wives. As much as we are respectful to our husbands, our daughters will grow up as respectful to their husbands. And this culture, maintaining this culture is very important for the spiritual advancement of your daughter's family, of your own daughter, and for your own, for her own husband and her own children, and for yourself also. And we also raise them to become skilled in home arts, because it's important that she takes care of the house, as we will see in the next few sessions about these home arts and wifehood and everything, how these things are connected. And we raise boys to be disciplined brahmacharis or celibates, that they are not into going after other girls and things like that. And they are disciplined. They have a, you know, regulated. They grow up, wake up at a certain time, sleep at a certain time. They follow the spiritual rules and the, you know, the rules and regulations that have been set up for them. And of course, for girls also. And you raise them to be respectful to all women as mothers. You know, they have to be able to respect women as mothers so that, you know, this culture of respect continues. And women are not... you know, don't have to go through these difficult situations in life as we are hearing so much coming from India, you know, where they are being violated like that. And another very important thing that we have to teach our boys is to raise them to be sensitive to the feelings of others. See, it's not that you raise your boys just to know how to earn money and, you know, be an achiever. You have to also raise them to be sensitive to the feelings of others. And why? Because if your boys continue as brahmacharis, they don't ever get married. So when they are, suppose they are as brahmacharis and they are preaching to other people and cultivating other people in Krishna consciousness. If they are sensitive to their feelings, they can really help them and serve them properly. But if your boys decide to get married, so then when they live with a wife, they live with another girl and the girl is chaste, she is following the husband and the boy is sensitive to her feelings, then it's a very good combination. So then it's easy for the girl also to follow the husband because he's automatically taking care of her so nicely. So these things we have to train them. You know, and the boys also should be trained in how to cook, how to clean and everything, because we are all devotees, and you know, boy should know how to cook prasad like that, so that proper dharma can be followed when the wife is not able to cook, the deities can be offered and all that. And then they also develop respect for the woman and all the chores that she has to do like that. Of course, it's the woman who would be cooking in an ideal situation, but the boys also learn how to cook. But then, you know, nowadays the situation is everyone is working, so then they have to know how to at least make proper meals and able to eat prasad properly. Otherwise, they'll buy food from outside, which will not be good for their consciousness. We'll see in the next few sessions like that. So now, earlier society measured one's worth by their spiritual value, right? Previously, and the role they performed in the, with a spiritual mindset. Now today, everyone's worth is based on their material potential, right? How much money they can make, what is their standing in society, what are the outside activities they do, like that. So nowadays, a dedicated mother is not valued as much as before. Now, in order to be able to deal with that, you know, then, you know, so that we don't succumb, you know, all of you are dedicated mothers, and you all have more experience on motherhood than I will ever have in my life. You know, so I am just sharing something that is based on Shastra, something that is that I have, you know, learned by asking questions also, and by hearing and clarifying my doubts. Now, a lot of us are dedicated mothers, but we don't see that being valued in the society outside. People value how much money you make. People value which company you work for. People value how beautiful you look. You know, a mother really doesn't have a lot of time to look beautiful if she's like, you know, she's so busy with so many things. Right now, what you are doing is not being valued in society. So how are you going to continue what you are doing, and where are you going to get your support from? So as we discussed in the third session, that, you know, to get, like, you know, you have to be with like-minded people. So you want to associate with other mothers who are spiritually focused, spiritually minded, who are dedicated, so that, you know, we all need that level of acceptance from a certain circle. So we find these kind of circles, and we also constantly keep hearing about Srimad, you know, from Srimad Bhagavatam, so that our spiritual focus is maintained. And we read about these different mothering personalities, and you know, like Suniti and Yashoda, and so many examples that we are discussing, so that we can continue on our path without getting distracting by the propaganda of Maya. And this is all propaganda that is distracting us from our duties. So we want to continue like that. And some of us may have to go to work for, you know, different reasons. Then we continue doing that, but we keep these in our mind so that while we are with our children, we can take care of them nicely. And another thing is, gradually, as you become more and more spiritual yourself, your own sadhana and everything is strong, you know, they automatically, our material needs reduce. So, you know, we need less and less to become happy in our life. And when that happens, you know, financial pressures also reduce, and our goals also change for ourselves and our children. So sometimes some of our goals may be very expensive. You know, that may be what all our, you know, the entire society is, you know, going forward to, and we think that is normal. But as we become more and more spiritual minded, you know, some of our goals also change. So our material needs reduce, and then, you know, some of us can take that step of spending more time with our children like that. It's a very important function, you know, it's a very delicate function that must be done properly so that the child can complete its journey in this lifetime, can go back to Krishna in this lifetime. That is our success. Not which Ivy League school they are going to, or how well they are dancing, or which award they are getting. You know, this is the reward. And we may, you know, when we are focused on this thing, we don't need a lot of these external rewards, because internally we will feel very rewarded if we are able to connect our child to Krishna. You know, you don't need any external reward. Krishna himself will make you feel rewarded from inside, because you'll feel so happy inside by doing that. Right? Now, considering society is like that, it's very important for us to sit and think individually, how much do we ourselves value our role as mothers? You know, and, you know, considering we've learned so many things about womanhood and in the last few sessions, and what are you doing about it? Like, what is your theme in your own motherhood? You know, do you have a spiritual theme, or do you have a material theme? Are you more focused on taking care of the body? Sometimes, you know, some mothers have more focus on feeding the children. Some mothers have more focus on just educating the child. Some mothers have more focus on just taking care of the feelings of the child. Right? Now, we want to have all of these focuses, but with a spiritual conception. All of these things we are doing so that the child can go back home, back to Godhead. Right? And Krishna says, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, that, you know, this motherhood, this role has been defined for all mothers, right? By Krishna. We've been given certain bodies, certain type of brain, certain type of emotions, certain type of changes happen in our body. And this is a role that has been given to us. It has been said in the Shastras. And this is what, you know, mother, Krishna's mother is also taking care of him so nicely, right? Then what to speak of us, right? So Krishna is telling, if you just follow your role properly, by following his qualities of work, he's saying in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 45th verse, every man or woman can become perfect. So he's saying in text 46, by worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his work. So through your motherhood, worship the Lord. Do it as an offering to the Lord. Your offering in your life to Krishna is your children. You're offering your children to the lotus feet of Krishna. And it is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly. Right? We may not be perfect mothers, but it is better to do that than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. Right? So even if we may not be the best mothers, but at least we are doing the duty that has been given to us. So do it. Even if you have to go to work, but the remaining time, focus on your motherhood very nicely. And every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. So please do it, you know. Krishna values your contribution. You know, Krishna really appreciates mothers because you are impacting your child's life in a way in which it would have never been impacted in the past so many lifetimes. You know, they've gone through so many lifetimes of birth disease, old age and death. Make this one their last. And if you make this one their last birth, it will also be your last birth, as we saw in the case of Suniti. And sometimes, you know, even if we put in all the effort and our children may never take up to spiritual life, but at least by doing that prescribed duty, you are getting purified and you have become spiritual and you still have a chance of going back to Godhead because you performed your duty sincerely. Like that. Very important. Now let's talk about this thing, you know, we are not perfect. Like even if we are performing it imperfectly, Krishna is telling, we should still do it. So many times we don't feel we are perfect as mothers. We feel we are making a lot of mistakes. Lot of problems, we're causing harm to the child or we are constantly struggling about what is the best way to guide my child. So one thing we figured is we have to pray to the Lord and just take his shelter. Pray to him for his shelter for our children and for us also so that we can do our motherhood sincerely to bring our children back to Krishna. Like that. Now, we don't want, you know, this term that I got, good enough motherhood, is again from that book, Difficult Mothers by Terry Apter. You can get it on Amazon or in the library. So she also specifies this thing of good enough motherhood. Right now, we will have our days where we are angry. We will have our days when we are feeling tired. We will have our days when we have a desire to care properly, but we don't end up caring properly because we may be tired or we are distracted or we are going through a rough time ourselves, you know. So all of these things happen. So what happens, what is being seen is your intention and your desire to really serve the child, right? And you may not be perfect, but let's just talk about a little bit about what is this good enough motherhood, right? So one thing is we are not here to become perfect mothers. We are here to become good mothers, loving mothers, spiritual minded mothers, caring mothers. That is what we are here for, right? If you are trying to become a perfect mother, you know, you are just, you know, perfect mother in the sense of, you know, it's a myth actually. There is no perfect mother. None of us are ever going to be ever perfect, right? And because we are covered with these material bodies. Only when we are fully surrendered to Krishna, by his mercy, we can become perfect. But right now, we are not at that level. But if we are trying to become perfect, while trying to become perfect, we should not lose the relationship with the child, right? So what happens is, suppose, like, I mean, which example can I give? Say, suppose, you know, you want to feed the child something because that is very important for the, you know, that is considered healthy. You know, this is a healthy meal. And nowadays, you know, because of eating so much healthy, actually people are putting on weight because we're eating too much healthy food. So suppose you want to feed your child something and you think that is the thing that has to be fed because that is healthy for your child. And you want to be perfect because that is what you think is good, being a good mother. But your child every day cannot eat that thing. But you want to feed it because that is important. You know, you want to feed the child. So What happens is sometimes in our perfection, we are not able to mold ourselves according to the child's individuality, right? For us, perfection may be that the child should go into an Ivy League school and study science. Then we think, I am the greatest mother on the planet. But your child may want to go for humanities and may want to become an artist or a painter, follow that kind of passion. So when we talk about good enough motherhood is basically a loving mother who is able to mold herself according to the child's individuality, respect that, but at the same time, care for the child properly also. Like sometimes if the child wants to do drugs, you don't let the child do drugs. No. You are able to mold yourself to the child's individuality so that your child can become successful in spiritual life. Like that. So the idea of your motherhood is not about you being a perfect mother. The idea of being a motherhood is you being a loving mother. The child developing a very loving relationship with the child so that the child can make progress in spiritual life. Like that. So the focus is not on your personal effort, and the focus is not about you being perfect. The focus is not about achieving your own perfection as a mother so that you get good credit about, your children being good. The focus is on being a loving mother, caring for the spiritual life of the child, and seeing your own motherhood as a service to Krishna, because the children are not your children actually. They are Krishna's part and parcel who have been given to you for your care, under your care, so that you can follow what Krishna's desire is for them. Like that. So, and also sometimes when we are in perfection, we don't allow ourselves any place for any imperfections or vulnerability ourselves. And that can be very detrimental for the child. So when we are just trying to be perfect, we leave Krishna out of the equation and we don't take Krishna's shelter in our parenting journey because we think we are perfect and we want to be perfect and we can read books and figure it out. No, one thing is we are not perfect. We can never be perfect unless we are completely purified. And that also will happen only by Krishna's mercy. So we want to be okay with our mistakes. A perfect mother will be very upset if she gets very angry with her child because she's expecting that she should never be angry with her child. But a good enough mother is, she's getting angry with her child, but she's understanding that, okay, I lost it this time, it's not good for my child. And then she goes and makes it up to the child. But a mother who's always trying to be perfect, and if she gets angry with the child, she's just so lost in how could I get angry with the child that she forgets that the child has feelings and that the child is hurt right now and I need to take care of the child. Like that. So we want to be good enough mothers who are loving, caring, spiritually minded, and who are able to mold according to the child's individuality for their complete spiritual success. See, if you force a child to do something in their material life and they're not happy there, they cannot take up to spiritual life. It's like as we discussed in the third session that, someone is forced to be, city person is forced to live in the farm without electricity and without any basic amenities. They'll be so disturbed, so physically and emotionally disturbed and tired. They can't think of spiritual concepts. So similarly, don't, we want to respect our children's individuality, what modes they are in. And another important point is, like we discussed in the third session, this mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. Now, how are we inspiring our children also, to be duty bound or to do their things, to be responsible and all? Like, mode of passion parenting is where if our children do something, we reward them. Okay, if you do this, I'll give you some money. Or you do this cleaning, I'll give you so many dollars or so many cents. You're inspiring your child to do something so that they can get something out of it. Now, what happens when they grow up is they'll do anything in their life only if they are getting something out of it. They will never be able to perform their duties properly, and they'll be miserable actually in their life because they will not learn the joy of doing something selflessly. And sometimes, mode of ignorance type of parenting, that aspect is also there where I've seen sometimes, some children, the younger ones, like 5-year-old is making a decision in the Vedic school. I don't like this teacher, so I'm not going to sit in this class. I don't like her. She's not teaching properly. Like a 5-year-old is saying that to the mother, and the mother is saying, "Oh, you don't like her? Okay, fine. Don't go for it. You don't like it? Don't go for it." Or the child says, "I don't feel like going for class today. It's too boring. I feel like playing tennis." So now one may think, "Oh, I'm supposed to mold myself according to the child's individuality and say, okay, you play tennis today. Don't go for the Vedic school class. Don't go for your spiritual class today." No, that is not molding yourself according to the child's individuality. That is actually giving into the mode of ignorance, which is, I do something if I feel like it. I don't do something if I don't like it. Right? And mode of goodness is basically duty bound. We teach our children that, hey, this is your duty and that's why you do it. Your duty is to study right now. Your duty is to go for Vedic school. That is your duty, so you do it. And the more we are situated like that, automatically our children are going to be situated like that. Right? But sometimes while doing duties, you know, we don't get the right reciprocation from people around. Right? We may do our duties nicely, we don't get reciprocation. So that is also not a very good motivation. The best motivation is, hey child, you do this because this is pleasing to Krishna. So we have to motivate our children like that, right? So first we have to understand what is pleasing to Krishna. For that we have to take shelter of a spiritual master and Shiksha Gurus. And we keep motivating our children to do like that. Now within pleasing Krishna, they may have certain individuality. And that is something we can respect. And sometimes they may not even choose to chant. But that does not mean that you lose your relationship with your child just because they are not chanting or just because they are not taking to the spiritual part. You still are going to be loving towards them. So certain things that I have learned from different lectures and from my, even if I am not a parent, I have learned this from how I have been parented, about, the wonderful things that my parents did for me, because of which I was able to develop an attraction for Krishna consciousness, because of how they raised me with those values. So certain things for all of you to contemplate about. So the thing is, we want to take Krishna's shelter like Yashoda Mai, like Suniti. We want to have our own certain level of self-acceptance also, that, hey, I learned so many things, but I'm not a perfect mother. This is a very difficult role. So again, let me take shelter of Krishna. Let me be sincere and let me pray for the child. And there is a willingness to understand your child, you know. Now, within the realm of Krishna consciousness, some, like say, even Kirtan, some children like to sing, some children like to play Mridanga, some children like to play Kartal, and some children don't like Kirtan, some children like to serve, some children like to read. You know, we want to respect their individuality in that and even in the careers they take. We ourselves sincerely chant the holy names of the Lord. We ourselves sincerely hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day so that our consciousness is purified. And we ourselves, the more we take shelter and we develop a spiritual conception, that is what our parenting will be. That is the basis on which we will take all the decisions for our children also in our parenting. And we associate and continue remaining in a spiritual atmosphere and association of devotees like Narad Muni's mother. And we follow a bhakti lifestyle. And if we do this, so even if we have ups and downs in our motherhood and our parenting, success will be guaranteed for you. You know, Krishna is going to be pleased with you and Krishna is going to help your children just because of your sincere prayers for the children. Like there is a story that it's a real story. It's a lady in Bombay. Of course, now she's left her body, but she took to Krishna consciousness. Her husband took to Krishna consciousness and her daughter, who was about 19 years old, they all took immediately to Krishna consciousness. But her son did not take to Krishna consciousness. Her son was about 15 and mother used to go to the temple and the son used to feel this Krishna consciousness is not a good thing because it's separating me from my mother and something is wrong. So he developed this kind of negative mindset towards spirituality. Of course, the mother was taking care of her son nicely and everything. And, there might have been some reasons because of his son started feeling like that. And the son developed a very negative mindset towards spirituality and everything. But because the mother sincerely, every single day she used to pray for her son's well-being, that finally the child took to spiritual life. And finally the child himself is initiated and his children are also growing up very nicely. So these prayers and our own conviction and faith is very, very important. And we must serve nicely. And of course, as from this example, we should also see that we don't pursue our own spirituality at the cost of neglecting our children. Like sometimes we are attracted to certain services or certain things. We don't pursue and we think that, oh, I have to do this because it's, important for my Krishna consciousness that I do service. No, a mother's primary duty in Krishna consciousness is to serve her child and help the child go back to Godhead. And if you do that, in Krishna consciousness, even if, you have a home program in your house, and you organize a program and someone comes, say if you have some spiritual master coming and speaking and, Prabhupada disciples speaking and people have just come and attended the program and had prasadam in your house. And if they take up to Krishna consciousness very sincerely, you get the benefit of that. You get the credit for that. So much so that if you're just feeding somebody who came to your house, so much so how much benefit you yourself will get spiritually, how much you are going to grow, how much mercy Krishna is going to give you if you serve your children nicely in Krishna consciousness. Now, how you all do that is going to be individual to your family and your family's needs and your family's dynamic and everything. So that is not something for me to discuss here. I mean, we are just here to give the principles so that you all can follow. And you all are wonderful people, following very sincerely. So these are some of the things we wanted to share. So something to think about, what is my motherhood theme? We already discussed this, whether it's spiritually focused or materially focused or academically focused, or even if I'm trying to focus spiritually, am I not able to give up the lower desires or lower themes that I have in my motherhood? Something for each of you to introspect. And in future sessions, we will be back on Thursdays. We just did this Tuesday thing because of the holidays on Thursdays. So future sessions from January will be back on Thursdays, and we will discuss about wifehood in the next session. The duties of wifehood and chastity and everything, and how scientifically, psychologically, spiritually it's very important. And it's actually a place of it's a position of control and not control, I should not use that word. It's actually a powerful position to be a wife, and if we follow what the traditional cultures have to say. Session 7 will be on family and community relationships and service to other ashramas and how important a woman's role is in that. Session 8 will be all about food, prasadam, meal planning, storage, preservation, we're going to discuss right from health to what kind of foods to eat to how it impacts the senses and the consciousness of the family. Session 9 on system, order, cleanliness, organization, and beauty in the house. And all of these things are there in Shastras and Srimad Bhagavatam. So thank you very much. Very grateful to all of you because of which we got a chance to discuss these topics and impact our own Krishna consciousness. Would anyone have any questions? I see them for Abhilasha. We didn't have the audio and video working, and there was a lot of voice drop. I apologize for that. I'm not sure what went wrong. I'll try to investigate. But are there any questions or discussions that you would like to share, or any points you would like to share? We welcome that. All right, if there is not much, then we will end here. Thank you, everyone. And Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We're very grateful for his teachings, that he's guided us at every step of our life.